Dr. Lori Roth.
We have a hero who has served his country in Vietnam, and as far as I'm concerned, they're all here. My guest this hour is Rusty Allen, and he was there, and there's a book that talks about the 47th Infantry Platoon, the scout dogs that were kind of the throwaway crazy guys that they just didn't quite know what to do with. They turned out to be heroes. We'll hear all about this story from Rusty himself. There's a book that talks about the special dogs that they became familiar with, that became pets over there, and what that meant to them, how they were used. Walking Where the Dogs Walk by Tony Gardner tells about this story. Rusty, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. Happy late Easter to you.
Well, you too.
Thank you. You were part of the 47th Infantry Platoon Scout Dogs. Tell the folks who the Scout Dogs were. Paint us a picture, because a lot of people, the Vietnam War has been a little while ago now. And how did you guys get put together, and how did you meet, and what was your rank? Who were you in this whole thing?
Well, I started out as a private, actually, and I wound up being a sergeant. But the way that they chose us is that at the time the 47th Scout Dog Platoon was formed, they needed a scout dog platoon, and they needed it put together rapidly. And we were a bunch of discarded NCOC with non-commissioned officer candidate school discards and OCS discards. We were kicked out or dropped out or whatever you want to call it from the school. And so they came over to, we were in a, what they call a casual company, just waiting to send us out to wherever. And most of us were going to Vietnam. We all knew that. We were just going to, we were just waiting on orders. And Lieutenant Stockdale and Lieutenant Missillon were the two commanding officers of the units, and they came and says they picked 75 people, roughly 75 people, handpicked picked us out, and they called us and said off to one side and says we're forming these scout dog platoons, and they
well tell the people what a scout dog platoon is. Is it some group that goes out ahead of time and sees what's out there? And
yeah, the scout dog platoons, you have a German Shepherd who's trying to alert on enemy that's out in front, people that it's not necessarily enemy, it's anyone that's out in front of you. You know, a lot of people say, oh, they only alert on enemy. That's not true. They alert on anything and anyone that's out in front of you. We've heard a lot of stories about, they say, oh, well, the enemy used to fool by using American aftershave and soap and stuff like this. Well, that's not true. They will alert on you anyway. It doesn't matter. They alert on anything that's out in front of you. It wouldn't make any difference. So they alert on people. We walk point. We walk out in front. Most of the time, a unit will call us if they expected action, if they expected somebody was out there, then they would call on us to walk point.
So, Rusty, really was a very dangerous mission that you guys would be doing, you and the dogs. I mean, you'd be out there on the point, taking the heat, trying to find out who's there and who's not there, and reporting that back. We'll dive in and find out all about it and what really happened. Rusty Allen is my guest. He was there in Vietnam, part of the 47th Infantry Platoon, Scout Dogs. Don't you go. I'm Lori Roth. We're having a little memory moment with Vietnam and a hero who was right in the fray at Vietnam. Rusty Allen has joined us. And there's a book talking about the 47th Infantry Platoon, the Scout Dog Patrol, and the dogs that worked with these men. Rusty Allen has joined me. The book is Walking Where the Dogs Walk by Tony Gardner. And you have a website that we're going to post this third hour on later on today, 47IP, as in PAM, IPSD.us.com. 47.
No, it's just IPSD.us.
.us. Okay, I'm a moron. 47IPSD.us. Thank you. And, Rusty, you were starting to paint a picture of what a scout dog patrol was. Tell us exactly the kind of thing you would do day after day. And that sounds pretty dangerous so far.
Okay, what would normally happen is that a company would call us out and say, we need a scout dog. And so we would they would come back to our unit, excuse me, and they would say, okay, the next man on the board, which we have a board enlisted the next mission, and the handler would get his gear. He would go get his dog. They would take him to the heliport. They would helicopter him out. He would go to the unit, and they'll say, okay, this is what you got to do. We're going from point A to point B, and he would point on the map, or he would say, just head out in this direction. And they would, generally speaking, they were supposed to, a lot of times it didn't happen, we would have what they call a slack man, a man that would walk behind the dog handler, and he would put his dog out front. Now, we had two types of dog. When I first got to Vietnam,
yeah.
I was an on-leash handler, which means I worked my dog with a leash. That means I had a leash. I had to have a leash in one hand and my M16 in the other hand. Now, you have to remember that when I was in Vietnam, I'm 5'6", I weigh 118 pounds. My dog, Sig, he was a big German Shepherd. He could put his paws on my shoulder and look eye to eye with him. He weighed 105 pounds. And he was pulling me down this trail. And I had to watch him, watch the trail, watch everything in there. I had to look for booby traps. I had to look for the enemy. And the dog, I had to watch the dog because he was looking for booby traps.
Yeah.
And he was looking for the enemy.
So how did these dogs get trained? I mean, were they trained at a certain military base in the
yes,
States
we
or something?
Yes, we were trained at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Okay.
It's a 26th Infantry Platoon Scout Dog at Fort Benning, Georgia.
So they were trained to look for bombs.
Facility.
They were trained to look for bombs and danger and things.
Well, the main training that the dogs were put through is to pick up personnel. The booby trap was secondary. And they weren't trained that well on booby traps. It was actually the handler worked more on working with them on the booby traps. And the school didn't work that hard on the booby traps. It was left up to the handler to work more on the booby traps than it was the school. The school didn't train them that well on booby traps.
So they were trained to pick up personnel. What do you mean, injured people?
No, the enemy out in front.
Okay, the enemy. Okay.
We look for snipers. Ambushes, people that were in bunkers, people that were in spider holes, people that was out in front, the enemy, anybody that was the enemy, or anybody that was out in front of us. Villagers, the dogs would pick up villagers. If other American
mm-hmm.
units were
yeah.
out there, they could pick up American units.
Now, what would they do if they saw someone? Would they bark or would they just toss?
No, they were trained not to bark, not to make any noise.
I was going to say.
Because that would be dangerous. If you're walking in the jungle and all of a sudden your dog barked, well, immediately the enemy would see. They would say, hey, that dog sees us. Bam,
well,
they would shoot you.
What did they do?
They would. Dogs had different means of alert. It depended on your dog. That's why you had to train, because you would have to learn how your
sure.
dog alerted.
Yeah.
My dog, Sig, he would stand straight up. His ears were huge. They would fluctuate. They'd stand straight up. But look, he would pull me. He'd nearly drag me down when he alerted on somebody. But each dog would do different. Some dogs would stop and sit down and just look, and they'd cock their head. Have you seen the RCA Victor dog? How
yeah.
he would cock
yeah.
his head? So some dogs would do that. Some dogs would air, what we call air. They'd raise their nose up in the air because they'd be scenting. They're picking up a scent. So dogs alerted in many different ways. So the handler had to learn how his dog worked.
So you worked with dogs. Did you work with dogs most of the time, you and this whole platoon?
Whole time I was in the platoon, I had my dog, and I kept this. That's what I did.
It was the same dog?
The same dog.
Okay, so different guys would have different dogs, and so they just, what, would they just sleep
Everybody
and hang with you?
Everybody had the same
dog.
The dog they got was their dog. They trained with that dog. They worked with that dog. That's the dog they had, because it's very difficult to work with different dogs, because you have to know your dog. You
yeah.
have a dog, what they call a dog-handler relationship. Once you develop that dog and handler relationship, that's what makes the team work.
What did they eat? Just the food you ate, or they just had dog food?
No, they had dog food. We had dog food. We had kennel ration, and then we had Gaines burgers. The dogs
okay.
didn't like the Gaines burgers, by the way.
So you were the point person. You and the dog would go out and look for snipers or look for enemy. And
right.
Give us some examples of what happened. I mean, did you find that much, or were they well hidden? I mean, could you find them?
I'll give you an example of what happened to me one night during this 1969 Tet. we were moving along, and Sig and I had a really, really great reputation with this company. And it was dark, and we were supposed to set up an ambush because we intelligence had told us that the NVA were supposed to move a regiment in to take Way City back. So we were moving along through across this rice field, and there was this big canal at about, oh, maybe 700 or 800 yards from us. And across from this canal was real tall, what they call elephant grass, real thick grass. And Sig started alerting about 800 yards from this place, and he was going nuts. He was getting these big, strong alerts, and it was dark. It was just getting dark. And so I stopped, and I told this sergeant that was leading the patrol, I said, hey, the dog's nuts. He's going nuts. He said, I said, there's somebody on the other side of this canal that was there. And he said, we got to keep going. We got to keep going. I said, I'll go a little further, but I'm telling you, there's somebody over there. And we moved and we moved, and we got within about 500 yards. I said, I'm not going any further. I'm stopping. I said, you can go if you want to, but I'm not going. So three guys, this sergeant was pretty new, and three guys that had been there a long time, and I had been there a long time. I was already a sergeant. I had been there a long time. So he sent these three guys up there to check the canal out. And they got up there close to the canal, and they said, go on the other side and check it out. They had a radio, and he called and said, go on the other side and check it out. And they said, oh, it's too deep. We can't cross the canal. It's up to our neck. And so the guys came back, and they said, we're going to have to set the ambush up another place because we were going to go out and set an ambush up.
Yeah.
That was what we were doing. So they decided, they told us, they got into a big argument with the sergeant. They said, look, the dog says that there's somebody over there. We're not going there, and it's too deep for us to cross there. It's too easy for us to get shot. We're not going there. So he called in, the sergeant did, and the CEO, the company commander, told him, move down the canal and find a place to cross and set your ambush up there. We did that. We set the ambush up in a different place. The next morning, we moved down to where we were supposed to cross, and the elephant grass was laid down where somebody had been laying down. We found some AK-47 rounds there. Somebody had set up an ambush for us.
Oh, my goodness.
The dog kept us from walking into an ambush. The guys later that night had told me that we could have crossed there, but they called back and told them they wasn't going to cross there. They couldn't cross there. It was too deep because they knew that Sig, my dog, they knew him, and they knew if he said there was somebody there, that there was somebody there, and they wasn't going to take any chances. So the grunts, the guys that I was working with, they knew that when my dog said there was somebody there, there was somebody there.
Yeah.
And in reality, there was. We found that next morning we would have walked into an ambush.
Now, you guys were in constant stress and pressure and no doubt fearing for your lives. How many dogs were working with you? Just one or two or a whole bunch?
Well, in our platoon, a regular platoon had 24 dogs and handlers.
Now, of course, I'm an animal freak. I'm an animal person. I have two big dogs, and I've rescued a ton of dogs. You had to have gotten attached to these dogs. Here you are, you're in hell. You're facing life and death situations, and you have these dogs. Did they attach to you and you attach to them?
Very much so. And the thing was, and here's the sad thing about it, is I wrote my congressman, I went to the chaplain and everything to try to get to take my dog home, and there was no way. The military saw them as equipment, and they stayed in Vietnam. And I really, when it come time for me to go, it was me going home or staying there. It's goodbye, Sig. I'm going home.
Yeah.
I didn't know any dog handler that stayed in Vietnam because of his dog.
Yeah.
Now, there may have been some, but I didn't know any.
Yeah.
Everybody went home. It was the option of staying there or going home, and everybody wanted to go home.
Yeah, that's so sad to think that you had to separate. But that was one of the realities of the war. It was a nightmare war. Was it just a situation nonstop where you were always looking for mines and people hidden in grass? And I can't imagine what that did to you. How long were you there, and what did it do to you? What was your experience? What was your experience there in coming home?
Well, I went there. I got to Vietnam in May. I think we arrived there on May the 25th of 1968. And I got to come home. I was what they call short. I was short a month. I got to come home in April, on April the 26th of 1969. And but see, I went back. I came home, and I had some post-traumatic stress problems, and I went back into the Army in 1970, and I went back to Vietnam later in 1970. And I went back to the 59th Scout Dog Platoon, which, by the way, was our sister platoon. We trained together at Fort Benning.
Sure.
And I spent another year over there. But I was an instructor. I was a trainer. I trained dogs and handlers. So
that was a big part. See, I'd never heard before I read this book, Walking Where the Dogs Walk, and hearing of your story and experience, I'd never heard that they had dogs over there in Vietnam. And now it's obvious that that was quite an organized program.
Well, there wasn't, I'm not mistaken, there was around 4,500 dogs and handlers the whole war. There was like a 13-year war, and there wasn't many of us over there. And even a lot of the infantry people that work with us don't even remember us being there. There's some that do. I got invited to Charlie Company, 1st of the 501st Infantry, their reunion. Some of the guys still call me, and they remember me working with them. And, yeah, they were a great bunch of guys. I worked with them. And here's another thing that a lot of the guys that were regular grunts over there, those guys walked point without a dog.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they had to do the same thing that we did, but without a dog. The only thing that we had a problem with is we had to rely on ourselves, but if your dog made a mistake, you were in trouble.
You bet. Well, it was just a nightmare of danger everywhere you went.
Oh, yeah.
Describe for the folks who have a vague memory of Vietnam. Tell us, give us a survey of what the war was like. What kind of war was it? What was the pressure? I mean, how was it different than like Iraq or Afghanistan? I mean, what kind of war was it? And what was the stress of this war? I mean, all war is stress, but paint us a picture.
Well, I think that one of the things that that I think a lot of the people in my particular type of a business, the dog business, is that a lot of the commanding officers took a bad rap. We have a lot of the people that was in our units that were blaming the commanding officers for going out and hunting up jobs.
Tell me more in a moment. I want to talk with Busty Allen some more on his experience in Vietnam, Walking Where the Dogs. Talking with Vietnam vet Rusty Allen, and he was part of the 47th Infantry Platoon Scout Dogs, and he was one of the ragtag guys that they threw together, and these guys ended up being heroes and saving a lot of lives with their dogs that they trained. And there's a book written about it by Tony Gardner, and I've read big chunks of it, and let me tell you, it's a tearjerker. It's really worth reading, Walking Where the Dogs Walk. Rusty, you and I were talking on the break. You were going through constant danger. You were holding it up. You started out a private. You worked your way to sergeant. Just hard work, dangerous work, being the post, always going up front and checking out where the bad guys were hiding and the mines and everything. Okay, this ate on you like it did so many military. You came home, and then tell us what was an experience when you came home, how you were treated, but also what was going on in your mind and your heart and your emotions. How was the real effect of what you'd just gone through?
Well, I it's hard to explain, you know. I mean, it was like 2 years of my life was gone. I came back expecting, you know, to pick my life up where I left off. Well, all the people that I knew had gone on with their lives, except for the guys that had went to Vietnam, you know. But all the people that I knew had gone on with their lives, had gotten married, had gone to school, had done their thing and everything. But 2 years of my life had skipped and gone. And I would go to a bar, and I'd be sitting there drinking a beer or something. Somebody would walk up to me, hadn't seen me in 2 years, and, man, where you been? I hadn't seen you in a while. I said, man, I just got back in Vietnam. They'd say, oh, and turn and walk off. Like,
so talk to me about how you were treated, because that was one of the big things that I remember about Vietnam, is you were treated like dung. Tell the folks just how you were treated and how you felt when you came home after putting your life in danger every stinking day.
Well, the thing that got me so burned up is that whenever I sat there and I said, I just got back in Vietnam, it's like, oh, and they'd walk away, and I'd say, you want to hear about it? You're just another Vietnam veteran. Oh, yeah, a baby killer, you know. All y'all did was kill kids over there, you know. And, I mean, stuff like that, it was just, you know, it's just like, it was, we don't want to hear your story, man. We don't want to hear nothing about what happened over there. You know, Vietnam is an old story. We don't want to hear it. You know? Well, here's the thing about killing civilians. Those civilians are trying to kill us. And let me tell you something. Down at Benoit, where our rear area was, there was massage girls. They had a massage parlor, a steam bath and massage parlor on Benoit itself, inside the American base camp. And there was girls that was caught in the wire coming through at night with explosives.
Trying to kill the guys.
Yeah, and that was killing civilians, you know. Mm-hmm, when they were killed, they were called killing civilians. And let me tell you something. Some of those civilians, you know, that they were talking about killing were trying to kill us. And let me tell you something. I don't know about you, but I was more worried about bringing me back home.
Well, and not only that, weren't they training some of the kids? Weren't some of the kids come up with grenades and trying to kill you?
I have a friend of mine. His name is Cliff Searcy, that's from Blue Springs, Missouri, that they had strapped a grenade on this kid, and I don't remember the full story of it, but he helped take this grenade off of this kid. Now, that wasn't the kid's fault, don't get me wrong. The VC had strapped the grenade on the kid, and Cliff helped take the grenade off the kid without getting him or the kid hurt. Cliff was a great guy. He's another American hero. He really is.
Yeah.
And he was with Charlie Company First of 501st. A really great guy.
So you were attacked by civilians. You didn't know who to trust. You just knew your men and your company, and that was about it. I mean.
Oh yes. By the way, one of my instructors over there in at Fort Polk, when I was in advanced infantry training over there, he got us to the side and he told us. He said, "Look," he says, "you have two kinds of Vietnamese over there." He says, "You have Viet Cong and you have Viet Cong sympathizers." So that's what he told us.
Okay.
So it's very difficult war over there. And I pity those people that's fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan over there, because you're in the same situation over there. You don't know who the enemy is.
No,
you know?
It's Islamic radicals. It's the same. You know, it's a nightmare scenario. Okay, you came home. People would spit on you. They didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to hear your story. Hi. Oh, you want to talk about Vietnam? No, and they walk away. Okay. Talk to me about how the PTSD looked. What was kind of surprising to you as things unfolded and your life started to unravel? What kind of symptoms were you noticing?
Well, I was always after I come back. Well, I had learned when I was in this non-commissioned officer candidate school, the more radical I was, the less people bothered me, and the more people stayed out of my way.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that. And then when I went to Vietnam, and I learned that you cannot be a wimp and be a dog handler. You cannot. You have to speak up, because whenever your dog alerted on a booby trap, it was not your job to go out and check it out. It was the guys, it was the infantry's job. It's their job. My dog alerted, you go check it out, and you find out if that's a booby trap. That's your job. It's not mine. My dog told you there's something out there, you go check it out. When my dog alerted on an enemy out there, it's your job to go check it out, not mine. He told you they're there, you go, you do what you want to with them. You go around them, you go find out. Anyway, that's I learned. And whenever they tell me, you go on, you keep moving, it's my job to stand up and say, I'm not going. If you want to go, you go. I'm not going anymore. I don't care if the captain, the general, or whatever. It's my job to say no. Well, I learned that And that's what I learned. When I come back, I really had that attitude, and it really gave me, I guess, a bad attitude, because wherever I was at, that's what I did. I just, from then on out, I just had a nasty attitude, and I guess that's part of the post-traumatic stress. It was my way or the highway or my way or the doorway, and that's one of the prime post-traumatic stress they claim, you know. And so I was just I just got really radical and kind of out of hand, I guess. It just, I bought me a 1969 Roadrunner, and it was 150-mile-an-hour life. You know, people, it just seemed like people didn't want to hear what I had to say. It's always what I guess the liberals wanted to say. When I wanted to say something about something, it was opposite of what they wanted to say. I got shut out and shut up.
So would you suggest, and I would bet money, a good 50-60% of the trauma you and the other vets came home from, you know, the nightmare in Vietnam, maybe 50-60% of your trauma was from there, and the other 50% perhaps was from here, because we treated you like scum, like sellouts, like nothings. You were part of a unpopular war. You're to be ashamed of. Was that not the other 50% of the ongoing trauma and horror?
I would say probably 40-50% of the way we were treated over here. Yeah, it was like, you know, one
you'd
of
like
the worst
think,
things you could
yeah.
say was that you were a Vietnam veteran.
Oh, yeah, you know? You'd like to think you could come home after hell and at least be treated nicely and thanked and treated like somewhat of a hero. If not a hero, at least not spat upon. But instead, you're treated like serial killers and Ted Bundys and horrible people. That would, I don't know how I would deal with that. I'd probably lose my mind.
Well, one of the things that we couldn't do is wear uniforms in town. You know, that was just unheard of. You just didn't wear a uniform around. You know, I mean, when you got home, one of the first things you did was shed the uniform. So, I mean, but, you know, I was kind of proud of what I did. I mean, I was drafted, you know. I mean, I didn't volunteer for nothing because, you know, I was like everybody else. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go to Vietnam. You know, I just kind of let nature take its course, and it did, and it did big time, you know.
Well, I will tell you, and I'm sure Patrick, my engineer, and he's been in the military too, the Roth Show will tell you that you are a national hero, and you did serve your country boldly and wonderfully and amazingly. And I am horrified that you could not bring your dog home and others could bring their dogs home. I thank you for your service to your country, which cost you an enormous amount. But you survived and you are thriving and you're an example of real patriotism and honor to our country, Rusty. Thank you so much.
Well,
I want to give your website on the other side of this break, and let's invite people to know more about this and where they can get their hands on Walking Where the Dogs Walk. I'm talking with Vietnam War hero Rusty Allen, and we're visiting about his story in the 47th Infantry Platoon, the Scout Dogs. And there's a book talking about this whole bunch of people, Walking Where the Dogs Walk by Tony Gardner. Rusty, where can folks get their hands on this book? And then I want you to tell them about this website.
Okay. They can get this book at Amazon.com.
Okay. Yeah, Walking Where the Dogs Walk by Tony Gardner. Folks, it's a thing you need your Kleenex box with, but it's well worth reading. And what can they find at this website? Tell the folks the website.
Okay, this website covers everything. It covers it's our unit history. It covers all of us. It's an awesome website. It's got pictures of me, my dog, Sig. It covers Jimmy Prezanis. It covers all the people that's in the book. It covers the whole unit history all the way back. It covers a written history of all the different things that happened during the unit's history, from as much history as we've been able to compile, all the way from the very beginning all the way up to the end of the unit when it stood down.
And, folks, that's 47ipsd.us.
Yes.
I want to thank Rusty Allen for his amazing service to our country in Vietnam in the 47th Infantry. and Tony Gardner for writing this amazing book and compiling all these stories, which made me cry a lot. Walking Where the Dogs Walk. You can get your hands on it, and I advise you do, at Amazon. And check out their website with all the pictures and the cool stories and everything at 47ipsd.us. I want to thank all the vets that served in this war. From the bottom of my heart, I am so sorry your country treated you like they did, because you really are amazing heroes.